You're listening to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California's farm workers. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. Just before the big wave of Dust Bowl refugees started to come in the mid-1930s, Jerry Martin's grandparents settled in the town of Watsonville in a tiny bungalow that served as a home base between seasons, following the harvest up and down the state. The old neighborhood today is still full of people doing the same thing, only they're from Mexico, not Oklahoma.
This was where the fruit tramps would have all lived. Many of these places they might have stayed in all year long. Gone off to the Imperial Valley, gone off to the San Joaquin Valley, and then come back to the same place. My grandmother was born in Arkansas, and my grandfather in Missouri. They both ended up in Oklahoma. They moved out here, I think, around 1921, before the Dust Bowl had wreaked the havoc that it eventually did. So they thought this would be their big opportunity. They came to California and followed the crops up and down the San Joaquin Valley and into El Centro, that area. Eventually, in working in the lettuce, as they became involved in the lettuce in the late 20s, early 30s, that's when they came to Watsonville, Salinas.
At the end of our tour of the old neighborhood, the photos come out. In one shot, Jerry's mother and father are standing in 1930s evening clothes in front of an old weathered cabin.
This is in the San Joaquin Valley in McFarland. Well, this is my mother and father with their old Model T. I guess that's an old Model T. This is my grandmother and grandfather and my great-grandfather. Now, they apparently were working here. I'm assuming that this is where they were staying. It's not a camp, but it would have been some little, it really looks like a shack. Very rough, but they would have only lived there for a short period of time. And family meant a great deal to them, and getting together with other members of the family. They were all so transient that they were always running into one another.
What California agriculture wanted, always, they wanted seasonal farm laborers that required no social responsibilities, that would come and do the work and go away. Ideally, they shouldn't even require a house. If they could live in a tent, or if they could just sleep on the ground, that's cool.
During the Great Depression following the 1929 stock market crash, agriculture prices dropped 50%. Wages plummeted accordingly. By the mid-1930s, there was a surplus of workers as migrants from drought-ravaged states like Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas began arriving by the thousands.
I'll be all around in the dark. I'll be everywhere. Wherever you can look. Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. I'll be in the way guys yell when they're mad. I'll be in the way kids laugh when they're hungry and they know supper's ready. And when the people are eating the stuff they raise, living in the houses they build, I'll be there too.
Wherever little children are hungry and cry, wherever people ain't free, wherever men are fighting for their rights, that's where I'm gonna be, Ma. That's where I'm gonna be.
At the height of the Dust Bowl migration, hoping to ease competition with whites, California passed a Repatriation Act, offering to pay any Filipino farm workers to return home. Only 3,000 accepted. But another effort at repatriating Mexican workers was much more successful, at least in the eyes of the police and the National Guard who carried it out.
So this is when the repatriados, the repatriation, and the forcible deportation of, you know, it depends on who you read. The numbers are huge. Half a million, million, million and a half, depends on, you know, who's counting. It's very difficult to get any good handle on the numbers, but just taken over and thrown back into Mexico. They were loaded on buses. They were, in some cases, lured, in some cases, just rounded up by the police. This is particularly true in Southern California. San Diego, L.A., places where there were large populations and the distance wasn't very great. Crucé por fin la frontera, crucé por fin la frontera, y en un reenganche salí.
At last I crossed the border,
ay, mis queridos paisanos,
and left in a group.
Ay, mis queridos paisanos, fue mucho lo que sufrí.
Oh, my beloved countrymen,
los güeros
I suffered
maloras, los güeros son muy maloras, se valen de la ocasión.
The white-skinned men are very wicked.
Y a todos los mexicanos,
they take advantage of the occasion.
Todos los mexicanos nos tratan sin compasión.
And all the Mexicans
hoy traen la gran
are treated without compassion.
Hoy traen la gran polvadera y sin consideración.
There comes a large cloud of dust.
Mujeres,
with no consideration.
Los llevan a la frontera,
women, children, and all ones are being driven to the border. We're being kicked out of this country.
Adios, paisanos queridos, ya nos van a deportar.
Goodbye, beloved countrymen.
Pero no somos bandidos.
We're being deported.
Pero no somos bandidos. Venimos a camellar.
But we're not bandits.
Los espero
we came to work.
Los espero allá en mi tierra. Ya no hay más revolución.
I will wait for you in my homeland. There's no more revolution.
Vámonos, cuates queridos.
Let's leave, my dear friends. We will be welcomed by our beautiful nation.
Historian Sandy Lydon.
The interesting thing about this story is that it's not well known. And part of the reason that it's not well known is that there's a disconnect in the story. That is, that the people who were removed, that there's no continuity from the necessarily from the group that's here in the 20s and the group that's here in the 50s. So that for a long time, there's no one here to tell the story.
The forced deportation of the immigrant workforce did not help the unemployment rates, which hovered around 20% to 30% in California. Instead, conditions on farms worsened for workers.
They said in California that money grew on trees, that everyone was going there just like a swarm of bees. We landed here one summer day. How hot, I can't quite tell. I'll leave the rest to you to guess. I know you can quite well. I tried so hard to find the trees on which the money grows. I walked through this hot sand so much, it's blistered my poor toes. Perhaps the money has all fell off or just a little late. The one who wrote this crazy thing lives in cabin 228.
All we have to talk about. They got good people and a sad belief. What we need for the people is the farm relief. It looks to me we should all agree. What we need for the people is the farm relief.
We will not submit to the prosperity that is obtained by lowering the wages of working men and charging an excessive price to consumers. As a people, we cannot afford to let any group of citizens or any individual citizen live or labor under conditions which are injurious to the common welfare.
While workers in other industries gained the right to organize through the National Labor Relations Act passed by Congress in 1936, agricultural workers were excluded. With nothing to lose, they staged strikes up and down the state. Many confrontations between company guards, vigilantes, scabs, and strikers turned deadly. Ed Maples remembers the tensions in the Brawley strike of 1935.
Brother, it hired them out at daytime. At nighttime, they drive around and find a scab. You know what a scab is. They said, there's one. My brother got beat the hell out of him. They put him back in the car, and they looked for my brother. My brother had to skip out, had to go to Oregon, live a couple of years to get away from him because they had a thing out for him to get rid of him.
You think they would have killed him if they'd found him?
They probably would have. Yeah, they probably would have, yeah.
Fight for Union Reservation. Fight for better pay. Fight to better our condition in the democratic way. 80 cents won't even feed us. Dollar and a quarter will be fine. Show the farmers that they need us. Join the picket line.
And he took us to one of the Hoovervilles. And that was the most incredible thing. Here were all these people living in old, rusted-out car bodies. I mean, that was their home. There were people living in shacks made out of orange crates. One family with a whole lot of kids were living in a piano box.
Oh, this is Buster Hunt, Marysville Migratory Camp, singing the Pea-Picking Blues Report. Well, the pea-picking papa got the pea-picking blues, and the red-hot woman can't afford to lose. Well, down in the pea patch on the knees, and I thought I heard better old boss sneeze. Oh, pea-picking papa got the pea-picking blues, Lord, the red-hot woman can't afford to lose. Well, the yonder come a road boss across the field, and the kicking the dust like an automobile.
This guy that used to be a member of ours worked in one of the coolers. He said he remember in Madeira when the vigilantes, they call them, and they'd come out, they'd have a change around their hand, and they'd beat hell out of the guy. He said to kill a few of them. This is in Madeira in the early 30s.
It was rough. There were a lot of those vigilante groups, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of vigilantes around then. Everybody was a vigilante or not a vigilante.
Remember, you're the big boss.
Government control, no worry about votes. Name your own salary. Bigger crops, lower costs. Why, ism even makes the weather perfect every day.
Then, anybody who was a laborer was a communist. That's half of the way of beating you down.
I hereby turn over to Ism Incorporated everything I have, including my freedom and the freedom of my children and my children's children, in return for which said ism promises to take care of me forever.
I remember when I went to work for this local the first time in 54, I had signed a non-communist affidavit. That was still, you know, prevalent in that time. But that was used for anything, like anything else. It's used for a purpose. It wasn't hardly no communist around.
In the San Joaquin Valley cotton fields in 1933, some 20,000 workers walked out in one of the largest strikes in labor history, the Corcoran Strike. Historian and author Richard Stephen Street tells the story.
Most of the farm workers being Mexican Americans, but at this time also including a large contingent of Okies who have just begun to appear in the state. And the strike basically arises out of wage cuts by the growers who are pressed hard by the declining economic fortunes of the cotton industry and decide to cut rates, which are already low. In the 1920s, you could pick cotton for $1.50 a day up to $3 a day. The rate cut in 1933 was to 75 cents and less. Given the hard times, basically people said, well, we cannot live on that wage. And this vast strike developed, extending throughout the entire cotton district. And it was a really very bloody farm labor strike. Three people shot. The worst violence occurring in Pixley on October 10th, 1933, in which two strikers were shot in what's known as the Pixley Massacre. The interesting thing about this sort of thing is that if you look at farm labor history and you analyze the question of violence, who does what to whom and who pays the price. With one or two exceptions over the entire course of farm labor history, you see dozens of farm workers murdered in the course of farm labor disputes, and no one ever going to jail or serving a prison sentence for any of those murders.
The Corcoran cotton strikers eventually accepted a wage increase in lieu of union recognition. In the mid-30s, California's agricultural economy was teetering under the double whammy of depressed prices and labor unrest.
Filipinos are trying to organize. Some of the Mexicans are starting to organize, and some of the Okies are starting to organize. This is a very tumultuous time.
The Salinas lettuce strikes of 1933 through 35 were led by Filipinos, who handled 80% of the lettuce at that time. That spring, 7,000 workers walked off the job. The strike boiled over into the streets. Lettuce trucks were turned over by angry mobs, and the strikers and guards exchanged gunfire. As the strike wore on, the initial unity between the races began to erode. Al Baguio remembers his father, a Filipino union man, packed a rifle with him just to go grocery shopping for his own protection.
What the growers did was divided and conquered. Because, you know, most of the packing shed workers were Caucasians, and they work in the packing sheds. And so most of the field workers were Filipinos or Mexicans or Orientals. And what happened is that the growers would offer more money to the packing shed workers so they wouldn't join the strike. And that's what broke the strike up. And so the packers went, the packing shed workers went back to work. The Filipinos were still, the field workers were still on strike, and that just broke the back of the strike. So the growers got what they want.
Finally, in 1935, Salinas lettuce workers won a raise to 35 cents an hour. Emboldened by their victories, throughout the 1930s, farm workers struck all over California, often successfully. During World War II, most Dust Bowl refugees left the fields for the factories, while those who remained saw their wages rise slowly with the growing economy. By the 1950s, immigrants from Mexico would replace the Okies as the main labor force of California.
You've been listening to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California farm workers, hard times in the country. I'm Luis Valdez. The stories captured in this program are voices of farm workers and their children from a time of unprecedented change and hardship in California. And while all that seems like history, there's still workers in California living in labor camps no different than 70 years ago. For there to be real progress for farm workers, they have to become visible again. We hope we've done our small part towards that end. To purchase CDs of the series Pastures of Plenty, please visit our website at www.coastridge.org. This project is made possible in part by a grant from the California Council for the Humanities as part of the Council's Statewide California Stories Initiative. The Council is an independent nonprofit organization and a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Pastures of Plenty was produced by Rachel Ann Goodman, consulting by Claire Schoen, website by Jay Molina and Joan Andrews. This has been a Coast Ridge production. Thanks for listening.